Welcome to the second hour of our broadcast today. Brent Johnson is our guest. The book, The American Sovereign, How to Live Free from Government Regulation. I think that's a great objective. I think a lot of people would like to do that. The website, freedomradio.us, is Brent's website. You were talking about the psychology of freedom, and, you know, you've been given something, I would say, to the audience. We've been given something, especially here in America. It's been guaranteed by law. Like you said, what does the law matter to criminals? By law, we've been given something, a dominion, an inheritance, the ability to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is guaranteed, supposedly, by law. By law, it is. And somebody wants to take that. So now they've concocted a way to take that, to abrogate that. And the basic part of that is ownership, private property ownership, private land ownership. Maybe that's what. Why don't we start there, Brent? What is land? Let's talk about land versus property versus a loyal title versus county recorder. Just briefly try to explain all that.
Well, you know, what is called real property, okay, consists of land, structures on land, you know, anything associated with land, okay, is called real property. I'm not sure where you're getting at what is land when you ask that question, but I guess what I think people really need to know, okay, is that when you own property, okay, whoever you are, an individual, a corporation, a trust, makes no difference. When you own property, you're liable for any damage caused by that property. That liability is what the government seeks in order to find your property. So what I said earlier about the criminals in government are looking to take what's yours and make it theirs, okay, how do they find what's yours in order to make it theirs? They find it through your liabilities. And we have, most of us have done it without even knowing it, but we have so many liabilities that basically makes everything that we have visible to the government criminals. Now they can just sit there and pick and choose. What do I want? You know, okay, I'll go after that, I'll go after this, I'll go after the next thing. And they do it by making their so-called laws, okay, and I make a law that makes something illegal and then go out and say you have something illegal and then take it. And, you know, that's the tactic. It's a brilliant tactic if you want to know the truth. Paul Goebbels, the Minister of Information for Adolf Hitler, you know, was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. He understood, okay, that most people will believe anything that they get from an official source. Doesn't matter. Tell them lies, tell them, you know, anything at all. Most people will believe it if it comes from an official source. And using that tactic, the criminals in government are able to get you to voluntarily give up your rights. Voluntarily. Rights are like tools. You can own a hammer and agree not to use it. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You agree not to use it, you're bound by the agreement. Well, what the criminals in government have done is they've essentially tricked most people into agreeing not to use the tools that are their God-given rights.
And that's why. Let's talk about driver's license. Yeah, let's talk about driver's license versus rights to travel. You know, these roads, even the Supreme Court has ruled the roads that you see out there, they're not owned by the state. The state is the manager, or you got to define state, but whatever, that's another story. The state is just the manager of the roads. The state does not own the roads. The people own the roads. So where did it get to where now we need a piece of paper from the state giving us permission to ride on our roads?
Well, first, you don't need it, okay? So they would put that off to the side. Okay, a license, by legal definition, a license is permission to do something that, if you did not have a license, would be illegal. Okay? So that's what a license is. So the question is, what's a driver's license? Okay, you certainly have a right to travel on the public roads. That right is embodied in not only in fundamental common law, but it's actually in statutory law. You have the right to travel on the public roads, but you do not have the right to drive. And most people use the word drive as if it means the same thing, and it doesn't. Okay. Driving is the act of transporting persons or property on the public roads for hire or compensation. That is what the word drive means. Okay. So if you are going to transport persons or property on the public roads, which belong to everybody, okay, for hire or compensation, well, you might damage those roads in the process of you know, making your money. You know, you want to get as many people and as much persons and property as possible so you can make as much money as possible, but you're using our roads. So, of course, the government comes in and says, well, you know, you have to obtain permission to do that. That is a driver's license. But if you are simply moving from point A to point B and using the public roads to do so, that is not the act of driving. The problem is when you go and you obtain a driver's license, when you sign the application, you agree to the rules of the road as set forth by the statutory realm. You agree to abide by that. You agree to stop if a cop tells you to stop. And you agree to allow the cop to give you a ticket for whatever infraction he decides you've committed. You agree to all those things. You voluntarily agree to it. That's the point. Everything that happens today is done through voluntary compliance. Okay? There is very, very little involuntary servitude. It's voluntary servitude. So when you get that license, the presumption is that every... Well, when you get the license, actually, that's a good question. But when you get the license, the presumption in law is that every time you get into a vehicle, you are driving. That's the presumption now that you have gotten the license. And if you identify yourself with that license, the presumption is you are driving. Okay, so if you're not driving, by legal definition, and the cop pulls you over and you show him your driver's license, he can proceed on the presumption that you are driving. Legal definition.
So then let's talk about this goes into kind of corporate United States versus the constitutional republic, kind of the two different things there. Should we get into that, or let's maybe talk about what a discussion with a policeman who pulls you over? Maybe we should talk about how that looks like.
Let's follow that up there. Okay, because like I said earlier, you win your battles if you fight them in the psychological battleground. So let's take the police pulls you over for whatever reason. Okay. If you're carrying the driver's license, you're going to lose the argument. Doesn't matter. The cop is a bureaucrat. His job is to generate revenue. Okay. So if he believes he can generate revenue on you, he's going to give you a ticket and he's going to go on and do something else. Okay, that's the way it works. So the key is to make him believe that he's not going to be able to generate revenue off you. If you can do that, then he's going to give you a warning and leave you alone because time is money and you're not, you know, you're not going to make him any money. Okay, so how do you do that? Well, in the first place, a lot of people say, I know I don't need the driver's license, so I don't carry anything. That's not the way to go, because you're dealing with criminals. And if you're carrying nothing, even though lawfully you're not obligated to carry a license, if you're carrying no documentation at all, the cop is trained. Remember, he's a bureaucrat. He's a product of his training. He's trained to assume that you're supposed to have a license and proceed accordingly. He will arrest you. Okay. So what do you do? Well, what I do is I carry an international driver's permit issued under the 1949 United Nations International Treaty on Travel. It's valid anywhere in the world in a United Nations member state except the country of issue. Now, you can get an international driver's permit at AAA if you want, but it's not good anywhere in the 50 states. Okay. We, at Freedom Bound, get international driver's permits that are issued from Nicaragua, which means you cannot use them in Nicaragua, but they are valid anywhere else in the world. So that's what I carry. if I'm pulled over by a cop, okay, he says, you know, let me see your, you know, license registration and all that, and I show him my international driver's permit. Well, he knows that does not give him the jurisdiction he wants. That does not allow him to do anything. He's not going to get a ticket revenue off me. So ultimately, what he does is he lets me go. That he may ask me questions like, you know, why do you have an IDP? Well, I'm an international member of the press. Okay, which, by the way, is true. Okay, but, I mean, if you have a story, you tell the story, okay, it's good enough for the cop. Because it's not personal for him. He just wants to get the revenue. If he believes he's not going to get it from you, he's going to go find somebody else he can get it from. So you don't carry nothing. You carry something like an IDP, okay, then you're going to be okay. Now, you can't be out there driving a big rig with an IDP or anything like that. That's a whole different story, because when you're driving a big rig, you really are driving, okay?
Commercial, you know? Commercially. That's a commercial enterprise,
yeah.
Or that's a
exactly.
That's different. Let's talk, okay, then what about car registration? Because when you register something, you're basically giving at least part of your ownership over to the agency you're registering to, are you not?
Title 18, section, I think it's section 31, says that a motor vehicle, note the term, motor vehicle is a conveyance used for the transportation of persons or property for hire or compensation on the public roads. A motor vehicle. Your car is a vehicle. When you register it as a motor vehicle, at which point it becomes regulatable and regulated. Now, the problem with registration is if you don't have it, you don't have any plates, the cops, again, bureaucrats, are trained to pull you over, to assume you're supposed to have a license plate, and to act accordingly. Ticket you, arrest you, whatever else, tow the car. Now, if you have the manufacturer's statement of origin, you may be able to get through. That's a document that's actually issued by the manufacturer, Toyota, Chevrolet, whatever. Okay, that it says it's your vehicle. You may be able to get by without any problem. But as a general rule, if you have no plates on your car, you're going to get pulled over. So you're kind of in a catch-22. How do I register it without running into problems? The best solution that
I've
come
right
up
there.
With.
Let's pause right there. We got the music on there, so we'll continue with that. And then I'll ask you about court. Is there remedies in court? Why is the court so against us now? The book, The American Sovereign, How to Live Free from Government Regulation. Brent Johnson, freedomradio.us. Stay tuned. Talking to Brent Johnson, The American Sovereign is the book. Let's get right back to registration. Finish up with that thought, and then we'll get a little bit to the court. Short segment there, so go ahead.
Yeah. So what I was saying is that, like, if you have no plates, you're going to get pulled over regularly. But if you register the car, it's not yours anymore. It belongs to the state, and they regulate it. So what's the solution? The best solution I've come up with, and it's quite workable, but it's not ideal, is to put the vehicle into what's called a pure trust organization, into a trust. The trust owns the vehicle, gets it registered in the name of the trust with a license plate, okay, and then the trust issues you a lease agreement. So you're now driving in this car, you've got your international driver's permit, and you've got a lease for the car. Cop pulls you over. Okay, he can't give you a license ticket because you don't have a driver's license. He can't give you a registration ticket because you don't own the vehicle. It's not registered to you. You are just the user. Now, normally when you get a lease from Avis or Hertz or something, it conveys the jurisdiction to you. You become responsible by the lease agreement, but not a properly done trust agreement. Properly done trust agreement, the trust retains the obligation, and thus you as the operator of the vehicle can't get a ticket for registration infraction. So that's the best solution that we've come up with these days, because since you have the plate on them, they'll generally leave you alone.
Tell me a little bit about the court and remedies and people violating your rights. It just seems we've seen courts say, don't read the Constitution. I mean, they've just totally abrogated the Constitution, seemingly. What is going on there?
Well, first, you've got two frameworks for courts. You've got Article III courts, which are judicial courts, okay, under the law of the land. And you've got Article I courts, which are military tribunals and administrative courts. Okay, administrative courts do not operate under judicial procedure. They operate under administrative procedure. Okay, what has happened today is just about every court except the U.S. Court of Claims, every single court in the land, official court, is an administrative court. As such, when you enter into that court, you agree to abide by the administrative rules, which means you are waiving your, again, voluntarily waiving your rights under Article 3 of the Constitution. Okay, so nobody considered taking your rights. You are giving them up, or you're at least putting them off on the shelf. And you then end up in a court which you think operates under judicial rules, but it doesn't. Okay, now, if you know how that court operates, however, you can do things to make it very difficult on that court to proceed. Because the criminals who operate the court, the number one thing they don't want is for the people sitting in the public part of the courtroom, okay, to know what's going on. Okay, they thrive on secrecy. They thrive on the idea that everyone believes this is a legitimate judicial court. So if your actions in that courtroom are such to threaten to reveal to the people in the public area the actual nature of that court, they want you out of there. And they will kick you out of there. There are a number of ways to do that. Okay, and I'll give you, let's see, we don't really have a lot of time here. We should probably, do we have time?
We got a minute and a half before the break, but we got time after, so just go ahead.
Yeah, a minute and a half is going to be enough for me to actually give you an example. I'll give you one when we come to the other side of the break. But the basic formula is, if you make it so such that the court believes, the judge believes, you're going to reveal information that he doesn't want the people in the public part of the courtroom to know, then that judge wants you out of his courtroom. Okay? That's the idea of how to, that's the formula. Now, how you start doing it, you know, depends upon the circumstance. I'll give you some examples on the other side of the break.
Well, let me ask you this, then. That makes me believe that these judges are all part of the snow job, the con job that's going on.
Yes. Yes, what I said to you. Every single person in government in any way violates the Constitution in its organic form is a criminal. See, you have to start thinking of these people as criminals. I'm not talking about it metaphorically. I mean literally. They are literally criminals you are dealing with. And until you start realizing that and thinking of it that way, you're not going to act accordingly. If you know you're surrounded by a bunch of thugs, you're going to act accordingly to protect your interests. And the idea is to keep people from knowing that. Okay, what I try to do is help people to see that. Once you see that, then you're in a much better position to do something to protect yourself.
Now, also, it's that time of year where the short wave that goes in and out or what have you, two frequencies, 7490 and 13845. So if you're having trouble on one in the morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, then try the other one. So check that, or central time, excuse me, 7 a.m. Central to 9 a.m. Central. Check those two frequencies out. And thepowerhour.com is our website. So good to be with you. Let's get back to the guest. Brett, we're talking about examples. You want to give a few examples before we go further? Why don't you go ahead with that?
Yeah, we're talking about court. Well, let's take a basic thing, like some kind of a driver's license, something or other, okay? And you walk into that court you're in an Article I court, so you have to understand you're in enemy territory, okay? But the formula I told you before is valid, that you don't want the judge who controls that room does not want the people who sit in the public part of the room to know the truth about that court, okay? That's very important for you to know because that's where your advantage lies. Remember, you're smarter than they are. So judge calls me up. He says, you're accused of driving without a license. How do you plead? I plead null TL record. That's three words. Null, N-U-L, T-L, T-I-E-L, record. Null tail record. It means no such record. And you will find that plea, by the way, in American jurisprudence, I believe section 141, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But it's in American jurisprudence, a legitimate plea, null tail record. So I plead null tail record. The judge will tell you, because he's a bureaucrat and he's trained this way, judge will tell you, you cannot enter that plea in this court. You can only say guilty, not guilty, or no contest. Judge, I plead null TL record. I told you, you cannot enter that plea in this court. You can only plead guilty, not guilty, or no contest. My plea is null TL record. The judge will ultimately say to you, very well, I'm going to enter a plea of not guilty for you. Thank you, Judge. Judge, would you please tell me, that plea you entered for me, are you practicing law from the bench, or are you rendering a judicial determination? Now, when you ask this question, the judge is going to get very upset and say, what? Well, you have to be doing one or the other. I'm just asking, are you practicing law from the bench, or are you rendering a judicial determination? It has to be one or the other. Now, there is no judge in the land who will ever admit to practicing law from the bench. Because if he does, he'll be thrown off the bench and never have another job in court and be disbarred if he's a lawyer. So the judge is ultimately going to answer, I'm rendering a judicial determination. Thank you, Judge. So what's happened right now? The judge has rendered a judicial determination that you are not guilty. The matter is closed.
Mm.
It's on the record. There is nothing he can do about it.
Now, that's sneaky.
Yeah, it is. But the people in the public part of the courtroom don't understand what's happened, so the judge is able to, his primary objective is to keep them from knowing. So that's it. You're not guilty.
So you just say, thank you, Judge, and thank you for your determination. I am, and then walk away or walk out or what?
Yeah, exactly. He just said you're not guilty.
By judicial determination, he just said.
Yes.
All right, let's go back to Article I court. How did they get us in these? Why do we not have Article III courts? Is this the War Powers Act? Or this is the Emergency Act, the Trading with the Enemies Act, continuation of that? Why, when we walk in these courts, are we Article I?
This actually comes from the Reconstruction era. This started with General Order 100 by Abraham Lincoln, who is not the hero that everybody makes him out to be. One of the biggest tyrants there ever has been in American history. And General Order 100, and I have a copy of that General Order, by the way, was the first time that military jurisdiction was established. Then after the war between the states, I don't call it the Civil War because there was nothing civil about it, after the war between the states, in the Reconstruction era, everything was placed under military jurisdiction, including the courts. Now, since then, up until the 1960s, every single state was incorporated. Back in the Reconstruction era, the United States was incorporated, but then every single state was incorporated. All corporations get their existence from federal statutory law. Thus, all corporations are subject to federal jurisdiction. Okay? You with me on this? Now, these corporate states then established their own courts. By their very nature, those courts are all subject to federal jurisdiction. Every court is subject to federal jurisdiction under corporate law, and this is where all your administrative courts came from. And the only reason that the U.S. Court of Claims is not is because there still has to be an avenue for Article III courts. Okay, that's the only Article III court in existence, official court in existence. So all of the courts are Article I courts. Now, how you got involved in that is very simple. You crossed the bar. You entered the court. know, you could go sit in the public area and you're fine. The moment you cross the bar, okay, you have agreed. Nobody dragged you across the bar. You walked across it. You voluntarily agreed to waive your rights in favor of the Article I court.
All right. Let's take it the other way. Let's say I don't want to voluntarily. Let's say I never cross the bar. I don't cross the bar, and I don't even go to court, and I just say, you know, you're playing your games, whatever. I'm not playing this. Then they issue a warrant for you, and then they arrest you and put you in jail for not appearing.
Well, now that's interesting. First, it depends on the state. For example, in Oregon, I knew one person who did this all the time. He refused to cross the bar. He refused to respond to their summonses, and so what they would do is they would send a bunch of cops up to him. Okay, the cops would go and they would touch him, okay, saying you've been served with this failure to appear warrant, and then they would go away. And then he would fail to appear for the failure to appear warrant, and they would do it again and again and again and again. Some states do it that way. Now, if you happen to be in a state, okay, where they're going to go and they're going to physically collect you. Let's take a worst-case scenario. They're going to physically collect you and drag you into their court. You still have the ability to not agree to the court. They can kidnap you, okay? They can railroad you, but you always have some kind of remedy. The problem is, and we're talking worst-case scenario, the problem is you're dealing with criminals. And so if they drag you in there, you always want to have somebody in that courtroom to witness what's going on. Okay, because there's going to be all kinds
of
travesties.
Oh, my gosh, this is so...
Look, most people
won't do this. I understand where we're going with this. This is important information. But most people listening, you know, my grandmother, she's not going to do this. She didn't even go there.
I'm also saying, in most circumstances, what you described is not going to happen. It's a worst-case scenario. That's what I'm saying. You want to take the worst-case scenario. It could happen, but it's likely not going to happen.
There's the music. On the other side, let's continue with this. I mean, this book, we could talk about this. Well, maybe we'll have Brent on regularly to talk about some of these things. On the other side, how did we get to this spot? Are we reaching a critical mass here? Welcome back to Power Hour. So good to be with you, and so glad that you joined us today. Last segment with Brent Johnson. The book is The American Sovereign, How to Live Free from Government Regulation. That's the object I think most of us are interested in. His website, freedomradio.us, and the phone number. If you want to call him directly and talk about some of these things or personal things that you're dealing with, 888-385-3733, 888-385-3733, 888-385-3733, or 385-FREE. Do you see all this? I mean, I'm just so disgusted with the deception. You know, it's one thing if this is what they're doing to us, but they're not telling us. They're making us think that we're still George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, but meanwhile we're really Abraham Lincoln and the Union soldiers bearing down on our neck in the war of Northern aggression. That's really what's going on. I think knowledge about this and understanding is growing and growing and growing. It's coming to some kind of head that people do not want to be in this admiralty, this beast-like jurisdiction. They want the other jurisdiction. They want the freedom that our founding fathers had inherited or gave us for an inheritance. Do you see, one, do you see the knowledge growing? And two, is this coming to a head? I mean, are we going to be able to do something here?
It's growing. Okay, there's no question about that. You're right. People want to have, you know, a just system. But people also want to have their perks and bennies. Okay, and what they don't understand is you can't have both. You have to give one up if you want the other. And that's why the freedom, the original framers of the Constitution, the original founding fathers had a character of freedom. It's a special character. You have to be willing to not depend on your government for your salvation. Okay, and most people, I'm sorry to say, most people aren't willing to do that for whatever reason. But What I see happening is I'm a mathematician, and mathematics is one of the few exact sciences. So you can predict a lot of things using mathematics. The objective of the enemy of freedom is not power and not money. It is control. They want to control how you live. That's it. Power, money, all of that is a vehicle to control. One of their weaknesses is that they don't know when to stop. They never get to a point where they say, okay, we've controlled enough, we can stop now. They'll never do it. It will never happen, which means the government will always seek to control more. They will squeeze tighter and tighter and tighter, and more people will slip through the cracks as a result. But the tighter they squeeze, the harder they push, the more they try to control, the more people get pushed over what I call their line in the sand. Everyone has it. You've got a line in the sand. I'm willing to take so much, I'm not willing to take any more. Now, we all have a different line in the sand, but we all have one. And since the government will never stop pushing, inevitably, it will push more and more people over their respective lines in the sand, at which point the people push back. It's inevitable. It's mathematics. It has to happen. Sooner or later, enough people will have had enough and will push back. And when that happens, we will have a revolution.
Or we don't have the ability to push back. That's what I see. In the back of my mind, will we have the ability to push back at that point?
You always have the ability to push back. In Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago, okay, he wrote that if the people in Russia had only picked up whatever they had, rakes, hoes, sticks of wood, they could have destroyed Stalin's Secret Service because there were so many more of them than there were the oppressors. And the same is true here. Okay, there are so many, there were 535 people in Congress and the White House. Okay, and 480 million people in the country. There's so many more of us. You can always push back. The thing is, there's a risk to doing it. You might get hurt. You might get wounded. You might die. All of that is possible in war. But ultimately, that's what we're facing, a war for our freedom. And the question is it worth it? You know, how important is your freedom to you? If it's the most important thing to you, you will do anything for it. That's what our founding fathers believed. And we need to have people with the character of those founding fathers who believe, as I do, that there is nothing more important than your right to determine how you will live under God. And once you have enough people who believe that, they will push back, and they can push back, and they can successfully push back.
We got just a couple minutes. What's the deal with the churches? Where are the churches on this? I'm so disgusted with them, because what was a power center in the 1770s has become a neutralizing factor today. What's the deal?
Well, first off, there are churches and there are churches. Most churches in America
yeah.
have signed up as 501c3 organizations under the Internal Revenue Code. And because of that, they have given up their rights in favor of the benefits, the tax benefits provided by the IRS. Again, they have voluntarily waived their rights. So as far as I'm concerned, those churches are not churches. So I don't recognize those churches. They're not churches of God, period. Okay, so the problem you have is most people attend those churches. So most people are influenced by what those institutions say. That is a problem. Okay, again, you have to be willing to start thinking for yourself and stop thinking the way others are telling you to think. I tell people on my own show, I say, don't believe a word that I say. I don't want you believing me. Go check it out for yourself. Learn the truth for yourself. Think for yourself. That's what we need. We need thinking people. Thomas Jefferson said, you know, a free press and an educated populace. That's all we need. Okay? People who think for themselves. So the problem with the churches is churches have become an institution. When that happens, the institution becomes more important than the principles of the church.
Do you feel like we are? I mean, just the seriousness of this discussion that we're having. I mean, this isn't 50 years ago, and people are like, "What in the world are you talking about?" I mean, it's pretty obvious now. If you're even half awake, there's validity to what we're saying. Do you feel like, God, this is a way more important discussion today than it was even 5 years ago?
Well, I thought this was an important discussion 25 years ago, and people thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
I was being nuts about it and everything, but not. You know, everything that's happening was predictable, you know, and again, it's going to get worse until enough people have had enough and are willing to push back.
And push back, look, ladies and gentlemen, that doesn't necessarily mean you got to get your gun and shoot somebody. We're not advocating that. Pushing back can be no. We're saying no. You know, that may be the most important two letters in your vocabulary. No. Do this or else. No. No. No, no,
yeah.
No, no, no. Like my 5-year-old.
Yes.
No.
Yes. No. Exactly.
My 5-year-old doesn't have a problem saying no. Why do we? Wow. Great to be with you. The book, The American Sovereign, freedomradio.us is the website. The phone number, 888-385-FREE, 385-FREE, which is 3733. Brent, we'll have you on again soon and continue some of this. God bless you.